You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
This week on The Serious Side.
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's camp is pushing back hard against claims that his administration threatened to withhold Superstorm Sandy relief funds for political reasons. Hoboken Mayor Dawn Zimmer says Christie administration officials indicated that her city would not receive aid if she failed to support a development project favored by the governor. In one of several handwritten notes about the governor that she has made public, Mayor Zimmer wrote, "I thought he was honest. I thought he was moral. I thought he was something very different. This week, I found out he's cut from the same corrupt cloth that I've been fighting for the last 4 years. I am so disappointed. It literally brings tears to my eyes."
Well, I'm the best corner of the game. When you try with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm going to set it for you real quick.
Learning more tonight about the death of Alfred Wright, a Jasper man who went missing in Hemphill nearly 18 days ago. East Texas News 9's Michelle Reed has been connecting the dots and investigating into this mystery for nearly a month. And today she set out to get several of her questions answered. However, she found out new information about the discovery of Alfred's body that has opened up a new crack in this puzzling mystery.
Good morning and welcome to The Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe, right here on the TJRS Radio Network. Good Sunday morning to you folks. Today is January 26, 2011. 2014, and you're in tune to The Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Of course, I'm J. Ryle, and I'm never here by myself. I'm always here with some of the best in the business. Let me introduce them to you. First up, Ladies Are First, and speaking of Ladies First Radio, she is the host of Ladies First Radio. She's the author of the book Pregnant in the Spirit. She's also the host of the True Purpose Development Show, and she's also a member of the J. Ryle Show as well. Let's say good morning to the one and only Dr. Princess Adia. Good morning. How are you? Morning, doctor. Take yourself off mute if that's the case. Good morning.
Oh, yes, it was. Sorry. Good morning, everyone.
Glad that you're here this morning. I'm looking forward to the conversation. It sounds like you may be a little under the weather, so you can hang as long as you can. If not, if you can't hang, then, of course, we will understand. So I appreciate you being here this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Man, it gets the first and last word here on The Serious Side. My right-hand man, the man who I can't get any of this stuff done without, the one and only Mr. L.E.S. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing this morning?
Awesome.
Doing good, Ms. Elias. Doing good this morning. We have a great show on tap for you. Of course, our political strategist, Jerome Esprit, usually pops in after his commitment with Clear Channel Radio. But until then, we'll keep the party going. Let's get the conversation started. Once again, good morning to you and yours. Glad you guys are here this morning. First up, first there was Bridgegate. Now the governor's office, the governor who I'm referring to is Governor Christie, now in the crosshairs of another investigation. They're being accused of withholding funds for Sandy, for Hurricane Sandy victims. Let's get into this story, and let me get to the man who gets the first word and last word here on The Serious Side, Mr. L.E.S. Man, what is going on with Governor Christie?
Hey, he's a regular politician, man. Look, dude, wait till the rest of this stuff comes out that this guy's doing. I mean, look, man, you know, there's corruption in politics, man. There's nothing new about that. There's nothing unusual about that. That's just the way it is. And for him to do something foul like this, to hold relief funds until, you know, they come his way or do what he wants done, that's just low and underhanded, man. But you know something, man? He's a politician, and I don't expect anything differently. But it is what it is, man. They're sneaky, they're underhanded, and they do dirty things, man. They don't run the country what's in the best interest of the country, what's best for the country. They treat this country just like it's a piece of toilet paper, and this is, and I'm going to run it the way I want to run it. They're not doing what's in the best interest of their constituents. It's what's the best interest of my party. So that's just the way it works. That's politics.
But, Mr. Elias, is it fair to sit here and put all politicians in that circle? I mean, the bottom line is the president, he's not corrupt. I mean, I guess what you're saying is that he's a typical corrupt politician, because there are corrupt politicians out there, but I don't think it's fair to say that all politicians are corrupt.
I haven't met an uncorrupt politician yet, man. You know, the president does, you know, we talk about the president, man, but, you know, I'm quite sure there's skeletons in his closet, too, man. I mean, there's skeletons in all of our closets, man, you know?
You really think that? You really think that there's something out there? Don't you think with all the people who are against this man because of the color of his skin, they've been digging and digging. They haven't found anything in 6 years. Do you honestly think that there's something out there, there's a skeleton in his closet that will, you know, that proves that he's a corrupt politician?
Well, Alec, you know, okay, let's look at the law and who gave him money the last time. You know what I'm saying? Who gave the president money the last time he ran for an election? Do you know? Do I know?
I mean, listen, those are strong accusations. And if you have proof to that, then, you know, more be it. I just find it hard to believe that the president.
Did he take money from Wall Street?
But that doesn't make him corrupt. Mr. Elias, that doesn't make him corrupt. I mean, I don't want to turn this into. I don't want to turn this into something against President Obama. I guess if we really want to get into this, we can definitely have a segment on this. I just don't know. I just wanted to press you on that a little bit. But, hey, listen, that's your opinion, and I respect that. Let me go to you, Dr. Prince's idea. You know, Governor Christie, you know, bottom line is a lot of people feel that this guy will be the Republican nominee for president coming up in the next presidential election. There are polls out there that has Hillary Clinton beating him, but up until this scandal hit, they were fairly competitive. Now we're looking at a situation where it looks like he's been using cronyism. You know, they've been doing strong-arm politics, Jersey politics, what they used to do in Louisiana a long time ago. The reason why he won the New Jersey governorship is because of the guy that was in there before that was corrupt. So I guess saying all that, do you think he will survive this nonsense? And what do we make out of the fact that this governor is saying, look, if you don't support one of my rich friends and a project that he's trying to get off the ground, we're going to withhold money from Hurricane Sandy to victims who need that money? I mean, to me, that's a new low. Your thoughts?
Oh, man. Here we go, right? Well, all I'm going to say is, can we change the law? Can President Barack Obama run one more year, please? We're in trouble here. We're in trouble. I'm going to say this. I think that it says a lot about his character. It says that we're dealing with a corrupt person. We're dealing with a person who's really into the politics. If he ran for president, and God forbid if he won, because we don't have too many options, we're going to deal with someone who will be dealing with, not concerned about the people. And it says a lot about it. It just speaks evil. It speaks a repeat of the Bushes. It speaks evil. And he being a part of the Republican, I would say this. I don't think, though, however, that our people will elect a Republican president. I can't see that either, though. Although he being how he is, I mean, it's a concern that he would even make it to the ballot if he does. But I don't think that I don't think people will vote for a Republican, especially after what the GOP has done. I think they probably ruined it, or at least slowed it down for a lot of people. That's what I believe.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
For a lot of Republicans. I think the GOP have messed it up more than for the Republican side, period. Presidentially, and especially on the Congress side.
Okay. I mean, if that's okay, that's fine. Now, when we talk about the Republicans, Mr. Elias, now, you know, listen, Governor Christie and people that are close to the Christie camp are saying this really is having an effect on him. Usually when people challenge his authority, he's pretty boisterous. You know what? I don't give a damn what you think. You know, this is the way we're going to do business. And that's the reason why a lot of Democrats in New Jersey were really kind of falling in line with this guy, because they felt that, you know, he told it like it is. He's not your quote-unquote typical politician. He doesn't look like Mitt Romney. He's obese. He has a foul mouth. And he say, look, it's going to be my way or the highway. And sometimes people like folks like that. But now that it looks like, first when you're talking about closing the bridge for political gain, and now you're talking about withholding millions and millions of dollars to people who really need those funds, does it take a situation like this where ordinary folk can feel the pinch in order for them to really understand what type of nonsense and what type of bully this guy really is?
Well, if they didn't see that from the beginning, Jay, something was wrong. If this guy, I mean, this guy's been a bully, he's been bullying people since he's been in office. You know, it didn't change who he was. He's a bully, and he's going to continue to be a bully. It's either my way or the highway. No, you don't run a government like that, man. You're put in office to support your constituents, to do what's best for your state, not for what's best for you. And it's my way or the highway. How senseless is that? So when we sit here and talk about this guy, and that they're surprised that it happened, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. I am not really surprised at all that this guy done what he done, man. It is what it is.
Yeah, but when you talk about, we say this, Mr. Elias, but we've always talked about that we have these people out here. When you start really digging down into politics and what we call the sausage-making part of politics, the reason why, you know, President Obama's not as popular as he once was, or when we have conversations about Obamacare, when people talk about Obamacare, when you hear the word Obamacare, oh, my God, we don't want it. But then when you start digging into the minutiae of Obamacare, people start saying, well, I like that. You know, they did a poll that, you know, 65% of Americans love the president's health care bill when they did not realize that it was the president's health care bill. And so it goes back to the uninformed voter. It goes back to the person who really and truly don't understand, you know, the details of this whole situation. So you say that people should have known this, but how could they when we talk about how irresponsible voters are anyway, and they just listen to whatever propaganda TV channel that they listen to, whether it's Fox News or MSNBC or CNN or whatever the case may be.
Well, how long did it take them to find out what he was doing?
They just found this out. What do you mean by that?
Did we dig into the politics? I mean, look, this is not only going to be the first of, this is going to be the first of many things that's going to happen here, man. It's going to be, you know, and it's going to be the first, it's not going to be the first time that they're going to find out this government did foul things. It's going to continue. It's going to be an avalanche of things once it all comes out, man. That's the way it works, man. When you're a dirty politician, it all comes out.
You just took my next question. I was going to ask that. Do you think, because so far, and I'll swing this around to you, Dr. Prince, so far, the governor said, look, he didn't know anything about this. Now, a lot of people on the inside are saying that's bull crap because you're this guy that runs your ship with an ironclad fist. People don't move unless you tell them to move. People don't jump until you tell them how high. And so for you to sit here and play the I don't know game or the dun-a-dun game is ridiculous because that's not the way he does business. That being said, I have a question for you. My question is this. So far, there are no links that the governor was directly involved. Do you think that there's information out there that's going to tie the governor into this, showing that he had direct knowledge of not only these two things that have come to light, but other things that may be hidden in the closet?
Yes, I do. I was going to say, last week, we were having the discussion about this, and we said that, there was people had different opinions on whether or not he knew knew what was done was done. I mean, people had questions. But now, I think, yes, it brings it back to the fact that, okay, according to new information, more than likely he knew what was going on. yeah, I believe that it's going to come out. I believe that that's going to, people are now going to reconsider what they thought before. I believe that now if we ask the panel to, you know, panel again the same questions that was asked when we had this discussion a week or two ago, they probably change and say, yeah, you know what? Now, maybe he is the one, okay? Maybe he did know, and he was just playing the role of ignorance, you know. That's what I believe.
Well, you know, and so, Mr. Elias, I'll ask the same question to you. Do you think that more information will you know, shed a light on what's going on behind the doors in New Jersey in the governor's office? Because, like she said, last week we had this conversation about the Bridgegate, but now here we are a week later, not only talking about Bridgegate, but we're also talking about the fact that now, you know, if you don't support a function or a project that we want you to support, then guess what? We're going to withhold money. First of all, these are donations from American citizens. So how can you, first of all, say, look, we're going to withhold that money unless you do what the governor said?
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, Jay, it's the tip of the iceberg for them. It is. We can sit here and say anything we want to about this situation, but this is just the tip of the iceberg, and it's all going to come out because now people are digging, and they're digging, and they're going to dig, and they're going to find, when you dig, you usually find what you want to. And they're going to find a lot of things out about this governor that was foul, that shouldn't have been done, but it was done because he wanted to do it, and that's what's going to happen. They're going to come out. It's going to come out. Anything that's done in the dark will come out in the light, man. I always remember my mother used to say that to me. Anything you do in the dark will come out in the light. Well, guess what? His light is now shining, and it's going to come out.
Do you think they will tie the governor directly to this and then catch him because he's lying? He didn't lie under oath because he hasn't been, you know, he hasn't been subpoenaed, but basically he's lied to the American people if that's the case. Well, do you think that they'll find something that will attach this guy to what's going on here? That he knew, he had direct knowledge of this type of nonsense and shenanigans were going on in the governor's mansion.
Didn't they just tie him with the fact that that he wasn't putting out the money unless they supported his people? Come on,
I don't know if they have anything. I'm sorry, I thought you were asking me a question. I don't know if there's anything that directly ties him to this. I know that the lieutenant governor, right, delivered this message to the mayor of that city in New Jersey. So, but once again, he's saying, look, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I just let people do. I delegate authority.
Of course not. He don't know what we're talking about. I mean, he's not going to know what you're talking about because he don't want to be tied to it. Jake, come on, man. You know, this dude is a politician to the nth degree, and he's going to continue to be a politician to the nth degree. So what I'm saying is that this guy is going to continue to push the envelope and say, I don't know nothing about it. I don't know nothing about it. Even if he's got something that's pushed in his face and said, this is direct proof that we did this. What do most Republicans do? They say, that wasn't me. That wasn't me. Mm-mm. I don't have nothing to do with that. And they keep it moving. And then people usually soon forget about it. That's what they do.
I don't know. I don't know if people are going to forget this because, like I said before, Dr. Prince, when you start hitting the American people where it hurts, okay, when they feel it, because it's one thing when you talk about, well, the economy is getting better, and, you know, the numbers are saying that, you know, America will be out of this crisis in the next whatever years. You have Americans that are at home saying, huh, whatever. Bottom line is, I don't feel that. Okay, I don't feel it. I'm still unemployed. I'm still sitting here working three or four jobs trying to make ends meet. That's the reason why I'm going to vote against this administration, and I'm talking about from a national level now, because of the fact that I don't feel the impact. Well, let's bring it back to New Jersey. They felt the impact of this. You know, you shut down the busiest bridge in the world, not in America, in the world. Think about that. You shut this bridge down, which had adverse effect on people. Some people have, you know, there's already a class action lawsuit that's out there. Some people have lost money behind this. Americans are feeling this nonsense. And then you're saying, okay, now you have people who are trying to rebuild their lives, and you're withholding funds because of one of your rich developer partners? I mean, come on. I mean, the Republicans, in my opinion, has really been doing some nonsense. You look at what's going on with the Virginia governor. His wife is out there spending money like she's lost her damn mind. I mean, these guys And he's going to be indicted. So I guess the question for you, Dr. Princess O'Day, and I'm sorry I'm a little long with it this morning. My question to you is this. Do you think that if they tie the governor into this, right, because there's a law out there that says you can't do this, do you think he will be convicted, tried and convicted of a crime?
I want to say yes. I want to. But I don't know. But I would love to say yes, but our government is so corrupted, so I don't know. I mean, if President Barack Obama has something to do with it, if he has 2 cents in it, yeah, I think he would, definitely.
Well, he won't. He won't. I mean, that's not something he would do.
Right, exactly. And I'm being funny. I mean, because I know, yeah. I know he won't. But I'm saying that would be, I could say yes if that were the case. But he's not. I don't think that it will. No, I don't. I don't. I mean, if it affected his people bad enough, I mean, really bad enough, then I'm sure, New Jersey, they'll step up and do what they have. You know, they'll do what they have to do. I believe. I mean, if it affected the people enough.
Okay.
If it affected the people enough. I mean, I don't, you know, it's one thing to affect the politicians, and that's not really affecting the people. And sometimes with the scenario of people going through so much as they are in this day and age, and like you said, many people are still saying, you know, I don't have any money, I'm broke, I'm, you know, jobless, and this and that hasn't happened. A lot of times people lose interest in what's going on governmentally that does not personally impact them. So,
did you just make up a word?
I said personally impact.
No, I'm saying, did you just make up a word with governmentally? I'm not, is that a word? I'm not sure. I have to look that up during the day.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say there is a dictionary called Princess Adelia, so we're going to let it go this morning. Just look it up in the P.O. dictionary, darling.
Yeah, I got you.
So.
Oh, man. All right, it's 21 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the serious side of the J-Rouse Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. The phone number is 347-850-1272. You can call in, be a part of this conversation. The first segment, we have about 6 minutes left in the segment, and our political strategist, the smartest man in the world, Jerome Esprit, has stopped in. Good morning, Jerome.
Hey, good morning.
We're talking about Governor Chris Christie. Last week we were talking about the bridge to nowhere. Basically, they shut the George Washington Bridge down, or whatever the name of that bridge is, that's in Jersey. That's the what they call the busiest bridge in the world. And now here we are a week later talking about the fact that his administration, it looks like his administration is at it again, saying, look, unless you support my rich friend who's trying to put a development somewhere in your city, we're going to withhold funds. What are your thoughts?
Well, George Washington Bridge does cut through New Jersey, and it's the quickest way to Manhattan. So it's the busiest bridge because it's the quickest way into the island. I mean Manhattan's island. So the way to go to that in that direction in New York City, you come through Pennsylvania Way and then go through New Jersey. It's actually an interesting route, but. Busiest bridge, and I'm sure, I'm surprised that anybody, like anyone, is surprised that he's a bully. I don't know if you've ever watched the press conference with Christie. Christie is
right.
A bully, right? And so as people sit there and try to defend him to say he didn't know, there is, and we talked about this before, there is no way that you don't know. Your chief of staff, none of those guys do anything without your permission. It's the nature of those jobs, right? So you don't have people in your inner circle operating behind your back, unless you're probably George Bush. But that's a whole other story that Katie that was off the rails. But it's, and I can tell you, even on the federal level, the reason you can do that at the presidential level is because there's just a lot of departments. It's just things that he didn't look at. But at a governor's level, something
right.
as critical as the George Washington Bridge, like, New Jersey has always been known as New York City suburb, right?
Right.
There's a million square miles of pine barrens, of, like, barren land in New Jersey. New Jersey does not have a lot of occupied space. That's why Newark and Hoboken, which is right across from Manhattan, has the dense population. So it's just a rural state anyway. It's just, you know, just big urban centers because of their proximity to New York City, and a lot of people from New York move to New Jersey. And a lot of rich folks live in Jersey from New York, too. So the problem is that he strong-armed. They messed with Port Authority, which is, you know, kind of appointed by New York State and New Jersey, and that brings that under federal jurisdiction. And when you tamper with interstates like that, you are going to have some problems. So he's susceptible to doing some serious jail time behind that.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's the thing that we're talking about. I mean, will it get to that point where he may be convicted, I mean, tried and convicted and served time? I mean, do you honestly think that that would happen, Jerome?
Oh, hey, look what's going on in Virginia. And the irony of the two Republican governors who got elected during that sweep of 2010 or whatever that was, the only two that were in those states were Christie and Virginia's governor, and they are both getting corruption stuff. One's taking gifts all over the place, knowingly taking gifts, and Christie was who's done the same. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember the story of him flying a helicopter to his son's Little League baseball game. He said, oh, yeah, I was busy. So they landed the helicopter on the field. He went and watched the game and then got in the helicopter and left. He was that dude was running that time, you know, running it like he was the Don anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're talking about, misappropriation of government funds. That's what we used to call it in the military.
Yeah, and not only is he doing that, he's acting as if there's a lot of things you can do from running a state or a government just to begin with. But the problem with Christie is mean-spirited, and so it doesn't surprise me that he strong-armed those mayors in these Democratic cities. It's a Democratic state, and it doesn't surprise me that everybody else was scared of him. So now you're watching the scared people. It's like being a bully. You know, you have to remember, at some point, when enough people coalesce against the bully's going down. You can only be a bully but so long. It doesn't work for the long term. Right? So there's always this philosophy in life that whether it's, is it better to be loved or feared? And the truth is, fear to get you killed quicker. So, you know, they're going to turn on him, and that's why the guy who was at the hearing said, I want immunity, because if that guy gets immunity, Christie is going to jail. So, you know, federal government goes for the bigger fish.
I was thinking the same thing. I mean, I was definitely thinking the same thing, that if those guys turn, and if it gets to the point where they continue to what they call character assassination with these guys want to be able to work in the future. And I don't know who you are or what you are. There's such a thing as loyalty, but when it gets to the point where it could possibly have an effect on your future and politics, or, you know, your ability to get jobs in the future, I think I'm going to sing like a canary. All right, folks, listen, first set in the books, but we're not done yet. Coming up next, man, we have a great conversation. Thug, is it the new N-word? We'll discuss it next. You're listening to The Serious Side. Don't go nowhere.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
Forcing women to have an ultrasound before an abortion is justified because they already made the decision to be vaginally penetrated when they got pregnant.
Back in my days, they used bare aspirin for contraceptives. The gals put it between their knees.
If we're going to pay for your contraceptives and thus pay for you to have sex, we want you to post the videos online so we can all watch.
A woman impregnated through rape should accept that horribly created gift. The gift of human life. Accept what God has given you and make the best of a bad situation.
These aren't our words. They're all real things said by prominent members of the Republican Party.
Judging from their comments, the GOP must have a serious problem with women.
And until the Republicans get over their issues, we women have got a serious problem with the Republican Party.
Move.org political action is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Welcome back. 347-850-1272 is our call-in number. 347-850-1272. It's 34 minutes after the hour. The music you heard during the break was Ken Navarro, The Kiss of Life, a song that Sade made famous. Of course, you know how we do it every Sunday. We play the very best jazz during the commercial breaks. So grab a cup of coffee, listen to some smooth jazz, and then enjoy an intelligent conversation by ordinary people. It's the serious side of the J. Ryle Show. Let's say good morning to our panelists once again, just in case you're just tuning in. The one and only Mr. Elias is in the house. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing?
And, of course, the smartest man in the world, our very own political strategist, Jerome Esprit. Good morning, Jerome.
Hey, good morning.
You know, I love it. He doesn't deny it, Mr. Elias. He's the smartest man in the world, and I love it. You are.
And you're not.
Listen, you.
You're not anyone here either, are we?
No. Okay, and I told you that the issue always with that is when somebody says that you are good at anything, never deny it. It makes you not. It makes you the opposite of what people are calling you. So I'm not going to ever deny anyone saying anything good at a compliment. So, hey, I don't, you know, regardless if I believe it or not, don't ever throw away compliments. I have learned to do that over the years. Believe it or not, it's a part of my own therapy because I would never take compliments when I was little.
Well, you should, because you are the smartest man in the world. There's no doubt about it. Let's say good morning to some of our listeners. Thank you so much for getting up and listening to The Serious Side. I want to say good morning to Hillary. How are you doing this morning? Glad that you checked in. Also want to say what's going on to Karen. Good morning. Welcome into The Serious Side. Mr. Elias, let's say hello to a few people in the chat as we before we continue the conversation.
Covina, man, we had an easy ride. We have a host of guests, man. It's a bunch of them. We got Nika Road to Stardom, and we got Social Action Live. in the chat.
All right, good morning to you all. Good morning, good morning. Of course, you can listen from not only BTR, but you can listen from a multitude of websites. Just find your way in, and we'd love to hear from you. Once again, the number is 347-850-1272. Let's get into the second topic. You heard the lead-in, the drop before we started this set, and you heard Sherman. He's a cornerback for the Seattle Seahawks. He was interviewed after the game. He was caught in the moment. Aaron Andrews asked him a question. You heard the drop. And I tell you, it's been one of the most talked about stories for the past week and a half since the game ended. But what's becoming a very alarming fact is that people are starting to call him a thug. This is a guy that has a Stanford education. He does a lot for the community. He's a very smart young man. And they interviewed this guy, and they asked him, you know, what's going on with this? And he says, look, I think that thug is starting to become the substitute word for the N-word. And it got me to thinking, maybe we should have a conversation about that. So let me start off with you, Jerome. Bottom line is this a situation where white people are trying to substitute the N-word by calling African-American young men thugs?
Yeah. I mean, that's the pretty much how it always is, right? We always get painted with a broad brush, and if you don't come in clean shaved and speak a certain way, the white folks are always, you know, pretty much saying, hey, he's not, if you're not with us, you're with them, kind of thing. And I think that's what that was. I think the aggression that not the aggression, but the way he spoke in that interview was not conducive to what I guess white folks are used to out of black folks without seeing them on TV acting the fool. So technically, he was wrong, but you know, it wasn't something that they. I think they just got a chance to call him names, and that's what that is. So you know, once Fox or any of those other crazy news outlets start going off on black people like we are the worst of the worst, you know, I always have to question their motives, and I think it has to do with race. But
yeah,
he was wrong,
I agree with that.
By the way.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I tell you what, I definitely want to.
It
wasn't professional, and you're right. I thought that what he did was ridiculous, but it was. It really and truly was a ridiculous thing that he did, and it just goes to show that you can have a lot of money and you can be as educated as you like, but you can still do stupid stuff. Let's get out to the phone lines, Mr. Elias, man. Who do we have on the line, sir?
We have our favorite airline hostess, Nessa, with us. You call her Vanessa, I call her Nessa.
Well, hey, listen, as long as we call her something. Good morning, Vanessa. How are you? You open her mic. Is the mic open, Mr. Elias?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Vanessa.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Good morning.
Can.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Y'all doing okay? I'm listening to the topics. They have been wonderful this morning.
Absolutely. Give me your thoughts on it. First of all, I think Mr. Elias mentioned you wanted to make a real quick comment on the Governor Christie segment. What are your thoughts
you know,
on that
I
real
just
quick?
Said if he was, not trying to be funny, but I think that if he kind of looked like us, he might go to jail. But I don't think he's going to jail. I think that they're going to pat him on the wrist and tell him don't do it again, and nothing's going to happen to him, just like it hasn't happened to the other people when they've taken the money, didn't give out the money, whatever they did with it. I just don't think anything's going to really happen to him, but that's just my thought. I don't think anything, just a tap on the wrist, is going to happen to him. Look
that's
at all the Katrina money that was stolen and used and misappropriated.
That's true. Absolutely. You know, and Mayor Ray Nagin, you know, that whole episode with that. So absolutely. So, yeah, appreciate your comments. And then, listen, keep our mic open, Mr. Elias. You know, Vanessa is a person that travels a lot. She may give us a different perspective on a lot of things that we're talking about. So let's keep her open and she can hang out as long as she can. And you, too, can be a part of the conversation. All you have to do is pick up the phone, 347-850-1272. Right now we're talking about the new N-word. It's the new N-word. And so, you know, Richard Sermon, he made these comments, but not only with that guy. I read a lot of stuff, Mr. Elias, online when it pertains to African-American young men, especially rich African-American young men, and preferably athletes. Every time there's something said about an athlete derogatory, you know, nowadays you see the word thug. You don't see the N-word because people – you know, they understand. I mean, even though you have some of those clowns that will post that, but for the most part, you know, they're called thug. So my question to you is the same as it was for Jerome. Do you think thug is now the new word or the substitution for the N-word by white people?
Most definitely. What did they call Trayvon Martin?
Absolutely. That's a great observation, Mr. Elliott. That's a great observation.
They called him a thug. So that's the new N-word, you know. It is what it is, man. You know, you look at it, and we look at it as we're supposed to, man, and that's just how they get away with it. If you look at the guy, he was after a game. He was hyped up. He was, you know, what he did was wrong. I'm not going to say it was right. But, you know, maybe she should have waited a little bit after the game, because after the game and the post-interview, totally different guy. Totally different guy. I mean, he was hyped. He just saved the game for his team. And now he's going to the Super Bowl because of what he did. So he's hyped up. His adrenaline is flowing. So maybe she should have gave him a little bit more, man, a little bit more time to cool herself down. But, hey, it is what it is, man.
Yeah, well, since we have you, Vanessa, question for you, same question that I asked our two panelists. Thug, is it a substitution for the N-word? I mean, is this a situation where white people said, okay, I can't call him the N-word because I know what's going to happen. Look at what happened with Paula Deen, some of these other people who have done this, so I'll just call him a thug. People can relate to that. People know what I'm talking about or who I'm referring to if I use the word thug. Your thoughts?
But you know what? We shouldn't use thug to each other. If we stop using it with each other, thinking that it's cool or it's great to call each other a thug, then maybe they won't be calling us a thug. It starts with us, though.
Well,
I've heard
Jerome,
it used.
That's a good point she brings up, because we've been talking for years about us using the N-word and rap music. You know, you have a lot of African-Americans are saying we shouldn't call each other that. How do we expect white people to respect us and not call us that word when we use it amongst ourselves? And you have people who argue with, well, wait a minute, the reason why we do it, we use it as a term of endearment. It doesn't have the same meaning. But, you know, you think about it. When you hear thug life, the first person you think of is Tupac. So, I mean, is it a situation where maybe, you know, maybe Vanessa's right. Maybe we should stop using that term. And that way white people won't feel comfortable enough to use that word. Now I know what you're going to say, but I want to hear your thoughts. I already know your answer. I know where he's going with this. I mean, I've been doing Jerome too long. But go ahead, Jerome. What are your thoughts?
That's so funny. Because I knew what I was going to say, but then I didn't think I was telegraphing that out there. It's like I telegraphed the past. All right. Well, you didn't know I was going to say this. I have this, very admirable love and respect for flight attendants and nurses, so I can't really go against Vanessa, but in this case, I will.
No, I want you to say what you feel. What I mean, it's a topic. It's a conversation. I hear you in the airport.
And I was going to say, it's just not personal. It's just not a personal thought.
Are you asking, is it personal?
No, I said it's not. I said that what
he
I'm about to say
personal.
Is not personal. What I was going to say was this, is that white folks will find another word. So we can't watch our language to accommodate white folks, because then we'd just be chasing words all day. What happens is that they stereotype us one way or another, right? And if you look at what happened at the University of, Arizona State, where they had Martin Luther King Day dressed like a black person day, this happens every year on college campuses. It happens on Halloween. They're still raising their kids, and they're doing crazy, stupid stuff to mock black people. We can't control that. That is not our fault. We shouldn't be looking at ourselves as if we have something to do with what someone else says out of their mouth. We're not responsible for that. And like I said, whether it's the N-word or whether it's calling another slur, if you're in control of the English language, you know when you want an apple, you know when you want to sit in a chair, and you know when you call somebody the N-word. There is no excuse for anybody to mix their terms, saying I thought it was something else. So again, get hit in the mouth, figure out what words you need to use. I don't really play with being a wordsmith, although I do that for a living. That's not my issue. The issue is we can't keep defending people for oppressing us. It's not our issue to figure out what's going to make them tick, because they don't really care. They'll just roll to something else.
True.
And also, I want to say just generally,
hallelujah.
I don't know what the
Do you remember the Football League, LES, or JD, or I'm sorry, Vanessa, you can jump on this, but there was a Football League that started, I want to say it was the World Football League, I don't think it was the UFL, that they didn't have commentators and they left the mics on the players. Do you remember when they did that for pro football one year?
I don't.
Well, yeah, they sampled not actually having commentators on TV, and they left open mics on people on the field. The cursing was so bad, they had to stop that. You cannot, when you're playing a sport, I'm telling you, you cannot do things when people get emotional. Somebody step on your foot and you curse, like, you can't get natural reaction. So I think they shouldn't interview you soon as the game's over. This is not a political campaign where people are prepped, and let them take a shower, do whatever, celebrate first, but they throw a mic in their face and they expect them not to be emotional. It's an emotional game.
Especially that one.
Yeah. I don't think they saw that coming, but technically you can't, I mean, when any time that you have emotional things going on, you just don't throw it in someone's face. But that's just pretty much how news is. Somebody gets their house burnt down and they throw a mic in their face. And it's some, you know, so it's our media culture to do that. And we get shocked at when someone says something that we don't like. But he should have been professional. That was his job.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct about that. He was, but like you said, he caught him in the moment, not trying to make an excuse for him. But I've always been I've always been one of these guys that says, hey, never catch an athlete or a coach after a loss or a win, because the bottom line is you're not sure what you're going to get, and then you're ready to crucify the guy or person if this happens. It's really ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. It's 47 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the Jay Rouse Show, which happens every Sunday morning. Right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our call-in number is 347-850-1272. We're talking about thug. Is it the new N-word? Mr. Elias, let me ask you the same question. Should it be a situation where we should stop using the word? I mean, we expect people not to call us these things, and we expect folks to respect us. But, you know, we continue to do it. You know, hey, I'm a thug, you know. Once again, Tupac had thug life tattooed across the bottom of his stomach. I mean, so it's something that we embrace, but then we get upset when other people use the term towards us. Your thoughts?
Well, Jay, would it stop them from calling us that if we stopped using it? No, it wouldn't stop them. They would still use it. You know, it's just, I'm like Jerome, it's just an excuse to use the word. And somebody typed in what I was going to say in the chat room. Hell, Justin Bieber, who's supposed to be All-American kid this week. Would you call him a thug? What he's doing? He's a thug to his heart. He wants to be a thug to his heart. But they don't call him a thug. What if they call him a thug, Jay? So it's just a collective way of them calling us the N-word. And it is what it is, man. Bottom line is that, look, man, they're gonna find a way of degrading us no matter what, because this is what they do in life, man. So bottom line, not all people are like that. Not all people are Caucasian people are like that, but you know, some are, man. It's just the way they do things in life, man.
Well, actually, TMZ did call him a thug.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. They did call
TMZ
him a thug.
TMZ did call him a thug. So.
Right. Alec Baldwin and Charlie Sheen, I would throw them in. It's just because, and then Justin Bieber is around black folks, the still thug from TMZ is still kind of given a connotation that he is hanging out with the wrong crowd and all this other stuff. So even the portrayal of Justin Bieber, wasn't his father a boxer? Like, they were a mess. So although he became America's whatever child, he may get deported because of this, but the problem is, because he's Canadian, but the problem is that you don't know what kind of world that kid came out of anyway. So, you know, I'm not defending him at all, but I just wanted to say, in the football player's case, those guys are constantly under scrutiny. I mean, I'll give a really quick example of Donovan McNabb years ago. I remember we were somewhere talking, and people were shoving their kids into this man's hands while he was talking. He was, like, in the middle of a conversation, and he's actually a really nice guy. So what he did is he acknowledged the kid, talked to the mother, but he could not get more than, you know, three sentences out without people just randomly tugging on him. right? So you learn some tolerance, and I'm saying that the guy who they're calling a thug does a lot of outreach. He's around a lot of people. You've never heard him in trouble for anything before, but we get to characterize him and keep speaking his name in a way that that's some chronic behavior, and now they're giving his life story a rake over the coals, like, look where he came from. Like, they're doing negative profiling on him to prove their point, opposed to saying that it's a success, that it's a success story. So we have to be really careful on condemning our own folks, just because we are definitely not going to get the benefit of the doubt in the media. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, you're right about that. I guess my question is, and I think about this whole situation dealing with, you know, thug and, you know, the N-word and all these different things, and it's just amazing to me. And you know, what role does social media play in this? I've been hearing a lot of chatter this past week, Mr. Elias. People are saying, look, you know what? You know, we talk about how great social media is. We talk about how great Twitter and Facebook, but all it is giving cover to these people who put this racist stuff out there. They're cowards, and they do it behind closed doors. And I've been hearing a lot of people saying, you know, how effective is social media? Should we embrace that type of technology? Because you have situations where you see all this racist banner out there. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, social media is just what it is, a social media, Jay. I mean, should we embrace it? All, you know, social media is it's good for what it is, man, you know. Bottom line, no, nothing more, nothing less, man. It's a way of communicating. It's a way of putting your words out there. And it is. It's a way of cowards to put their words out there, because bottom line is, if they were in front of these, some of these people's faces, they wouldn't say two words to them because they would be scared out of their britches, man. So, you know, it's social media, man. What can you do about it? It's always going to be around.
Well, let me go to you, Vanessa, on this one. You know, same thing. We're talking about social media. Should there be things in place to prevent people from doing these types of things? If you sit here and put out racist rants and all this other stuff, should you be brought up on charges? I mean, should there be some angle to social media to stop some of this nonsense?
No, I don't think so, because I think that that's people's First Amendment right to be able to say whatever it is that they want to say. And I say that because when Obama was running for president and they were ranting and raving and having derogatory things to say about him on Facebook, that also gave the other side an opportunity to say what they thought about Bush and everybody else. So social media is just a way to express in writing. So I don't have a problem with that. I can read it. It can go in one ear. I mean, go through my head and go right on back out. So, no, I think that social media is a way for people to express whatever it is, just like those men with the beards, those duck men. People had so much to say about them. People had so much to say about the lady who cooks, and she called the N-word. If both sides got a chance to say what they thought on social media. So, no, let social media roll. I mean, you don't have to necessarily do what they say or listen to everything that they're saying to you on Facebook or wherever you're reading it. It is what it is, and it's people's right to say what they want to say. Might not be right, but it's their right.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's 5 before the top of the hour. You're listening to the Jay Ryle Show, the Sirius Edition, 347-850-1272. Jerome, let me give you the last word on this set. Same question. Do you think that people should do something about social media? I mean, now we have a situation where if you bully someone online, you can be charged for that. Should we try to find amendments to stop some of this hatred that's going on over the social media airwaves? Jerome.
So you have a lot of people who are just cowards, just they always say things, you know, out of sorts when nobody can see them, when they can act anonymously. So that's not that big of a deal. It's a part of our freedoms and freedom of speech. But the truth is that you cowards will come out of the woodwork when you can't identify them. There's so much racist stuff online. You would think that the world was just a horrible place to live in if you look at it from that through that lens. Because, I mean, again, I read a lot of news stories and a lot of different papers from around the world. And I can tell you, I very rarely read the comments, because the comments are always so negative. And it has something to do with people acting in isolation when they're on the Internet. right? They're not socializing. People are prejudiced and crazy inside their own house. So if you're conservative, you're more conservative in your house. If you're liberal, most of the time you're more liberal in your house. But in isolation, you don't really have a filter. And so that's a part of what our freedoms are. So with social media, yep, it happens, but we can't regulate that at all. I wouldn't advise it, because once you censor, you just go crazy with censoring anyway.
Yeah.
I just don't listen to crazy, but I just.
All right, well said. All right, folks, two down, one more to go. We're talking about what happened in Jasper, Texas. If you don't know, you have to stay tuned to find out. It is the Serious Side. It is Sunday morning. Glad that you're here. We'll talk to you after the break. Smooth jazz coming at you in a few.
This is a test.
As we jump into the second set with laughter, a hearty laughter from Toxic Style. Welcome back in, folks. 347-850-1272.
A show for women, by women. Is your resident map of the South, my little daughter.
Good Sunday morning to you, folks, and welcome into the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Jazz Cafe.
Powerhouse Sports Talk Radio.
Welcome back. You are tuning in to the True Purpose Development Show. Tonight, we...
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
Don't love me. You don't love me. You.
tonight about the death of Alfred Wright, a Jasper man who went missing in Hemphill nearly 18 days ago. East Texas News 9's Michelle Reed has been connecting the dots and investigating into this mystery for nearly a month. And today she set out to get several of her questions answered. However, she found out new information about the discovery of Alfred's body that has opened up a new crack in this puzzling mystery.
Top of the hour, a little bit after the hour, I should say. You're back. You're in tune to the Serious Side of the J-Rock Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our call number is 347-850-1272. You can participate in the conversation. Let's say good morning to you all again, just in case you're tuning in. Let's say good morning to the one and only Mr. L.E.S. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. How's everyone doing this morning?
Of course, the smartest man in the world, my main man, Jerome Esprit from EspritRadio.net, our political strategist. Good morning, Jerome. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. And slowly but surely becoming one of our favorite listeners here. Vanessa is tuned in. She's hanging out with us a little while. Good morning, Vanessa. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you.
And, of course, you could be a part of the conversation, 347-850-1272. We would look forward to hearing from you as well. Pick up the phone. You could be a part of it. Let's say good morning to some more people out there. I want to say good morning to Sweetness from Orange Park, Florida. Good morning. Good morning. Shane from Willis, Texas. Good morning. Welcome into the Serious Side. Tiffany, all the way in Seattle, Washington. Good morning. Good morning. And Deisha from New Haven, Connecticut. Arnold from Coolville, Ohio. Wearing his big cowboy hat. How are you, sir? I'm doing fine this morning. And Amanda from Kansas, Norwich, Kansas. Never heard of that. But what's going on? And welcome in, and we appreciate you listening. Mr. Elias, can we say hello to some people in the chat?
Yes, we can. We got Social Action Live in the chat room with us, Road
good
to
morning.
Stardom, Marianne the Music.
Morning. Good morning,
we Marianne. Have a host of... hosted guests in here, then Easy Rider, Covina Man, and Jerome Esprit is definitely with us in the chat room. So
Jerome has checked in as well. All right. Appreciate that. Now, don't forget now, you can participate in the show. If you're nervous, you don't want to call in, you know, talking on live radio may not be the thing for you, you can participate in our segment called Chatterbox. That comes up in about 45 minutes. You can just leave comments in the chat room or on social media. If they are good comments and good words, if they make sense, they're not disrespectful, who knows? Mr. Elias may make you a star today and read some of your information on the air. And don't forget now, we're about an hour away from On a Need-to-Know Basis with our main man, Jerome Esprit. I tell you what, one of the best segments of the show. We really love that.
Yes.
Jerome brings it every Sunday. So, hey, if you want a little light side of the news, it's lighthearted, but it's informational as well. So come on in. I mean, I'm telling you, it's some good stuff. That comes up at the top of the next, at the top of the hour. We're about 55 minutes away from On a Need to Know Basis with Jerome Esprit right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. But we have one more topic to talk about, and it's a topic that, to be perfectly honest with you, something that I really don't want to talk about. It's dealing with a young man that was killed in Jasper, Texas. If you've been living under the rock, or if you don't know, and I'm not going to say you've been living under the rock, because trust me, the story's not out there, but we're going to play it for you. Here's a sound bite. This is East Texas News 7, Michelle Reed. We'll talk on the other side.
Things are not adding up, and I'd like to see a full criminal investigation.
Despite information from Sabine County Sheriff Tom Maddox that the body was found unclothed, private investigator Chuck Foreman says that's simply not true, and the details are pointing towards foul play in Alfred Wright's death.
He's in boxers. He's got one sock on, and there's pocket change found by the searcher next to him. That's one indicator right there.
It's a question many people are still asking themselves. What exactly happened to Alfred Wright? A man everyone knew and loved. Texas Rangers have since taken over the case, but Foreman says he doesn't believe the Sheriff's Department ever did a proper grid search, especially since Alfred's body was found within a 20 to 50 yard radius from Customs Road.
Alfie would have been found out on that very first search within 3 days had that been done properly.
Yet Sheriff Maddox told me Monday night that he did do a proper grid search and never found any indication Alfred was nearby. Foreman adds that the strangest thing about the recovery is the fact that Alfred's body had no scratches on it.
Where our search teams found him was some of the heaviest brush that you could possibly imagine. You could barely walk through it, scoot through it, anything else, and there was no scratches. Even though all our rain gear, all the searchers' rain gears were all tore up on the sides from trying to go through the brush, it looked like he didn't have any scratches on him.
The fact that Foreman says proves this is a criminal case. In Sabine County, Michelle Reed, KTRE, East Texas News 9.
Well, we also reported on Monday about the possibility of Alfred may have been taking bath salts before his disappearance. We obtained federal documents where his wife, Lauren, says Alfred had taken a substance that was making him paranoid. Yet Foreman says we all need to wait for the toxicology report to see the truth.
Once again, a situation that happened in Jasper, Texas. We all remember the James Berg situation, a man who was dragged to his death by three people that he knew. Here's a young man, 28 years old, Ms. Delias. Looks like he was, an X-ray technician. I'm not sure. He worked in the medical field. He traveled from house to house to do what he did, and he ended up missing. For more detailed information about the story, his truck broke down, and so he called his wife and asked his wife to come pick him up. His mother was on the way to pick him up when they found the truck. He was nowhere near the truck. Someone at the store said he took off running. He put his cell phone in his sock. He took off running down the street. No one knows what happened to him. They conducted an investigation or a search, they say, and they ended up not finding his body. You heard the story. They did find a body eventually. A private investigator was brought in by the family. The family asked that local law enforcement not be involved in taking the lead on this investigation because they just don't trust what's been going on. Matter of fact, when they found the young man's body, Ms. Delias, they left his body out there overnight because they couldn't remove it because they were waiting on the medical examiner. And the guy's father pitched a tent and stayed out there all night with his son's body after they had discovered the body. Let's talk about this because it's a gruesome story. Let me get your thoughts. First of all, what do you think about this case, Ms. Delias?
It's very suspicious, man, that the sheriff couldn't find the body right away. Like I've said a long time ago, man, I really don't trust the police a lot, man, and dealing with them a lot. So, why couldn't they find that, the body right off? I mean, why did it take a private investigator to do something that they're trained to do? Something just doesn't seem right about this, man. Just something stinks to high hell with this one on that. And I'm quite sure it'll come out eventually.
Your thoughts, Jerome?
Well, I have not heard the story, remarkably enough. I didn't come across it or anything. And I have family in that county. And I have a lot of family, actually, in that area. And I don't know what to say about that other than telling you stories about blatant racist people, right, and how dangerous that is of being it's called Coontz County is the county that it's in, mm-hmm. And it's not a nice place to be being black. I mean, and so federal is going to have to come in. There is no reason why, it's way off the grid, like it is pretty rural, but the problem is there's no reason why the body had to stay out there. That was just flat disrespect. And if you watch 12 Years a Slave, you'll see the fact that constantly there were cases in the past of people just leaving black bodies out. I'm sure if it was a white body, I don't think they would have to bring a case to me that showed me that they ever left a body out because they said the medical examiner wasn't there. Medical examiner said, oh, who was it? And they probably left it. So there's going to be a lot more to deal with on this, but I wouldn't trust the police. I still don't. Like, that's not my issue, that I feel like that there's any justice when it really comes down to those particular rural areas, because it's still just as bad as it's ever been. And we just have to acknowledge that about some parts of this country has some horrible places to be black in. Black people are kind of 85% near metropolitan areas. So just having us in a place that in a rural area is a problem. I'm sorry for stuttering over that, but that's just disturbing.
Well, you know, the thing is that when the whole thing happened with James Byrd, and everyone knows that story, and I'll go to you, Vanessa, on this. When that story happened, you know, they did a lot of articles, and they interviewed a lot of people in that area. There are a lot of African Americans in that area saying, "Hey, listen, that's not what Jasper, Texas is. You know, Jasper, Texas is, you know, it's, you know, everywhere you go, you're going to run into some type of racism, but it's not the way it's being portrayed in the media." But yet and still, here's the story, first of all, that a lot of people had not heard. I heard this story. Someone actually told me this story, and I was like, really? I hadn't heard anything about this in the national media. And so I started doing research, and I'm like, wow, here it is. So they want to put this disclaimer out there that this is not a little racist town or whatever the case may be, but yet and still we have another African-American man dead. Your thoughts?
You know, isn't Jasper the town where they drug the black man behind the truck?
Yes, James Byrd.
Okay. Now, this man, he just comes up dead in the woods. These are two separate people, correct?
Yeah.
Is this not a pattern for Jasper, Texas, is what I'm trying to lay out. It seems like to me this is a pattern of racism in this town and that something is going to have to be done. Something.
Yeah. I mean, he was found, Mr. Elias, you know, in his boxers. And this guy was a football, but, you know, this guy is a big guy. So, I don't know what's going on here. Now, you know, one of the things that Jerome says a lot on this show, and listen, and it came to light in this particular situation, you know, the first thing that came up was the fact that there is an investigation pending with this guy, I think in Florida. He worked at a bank, and they think he has something to do with money missing or embezzling money in the bank. I think they found something in his bloodstream. So the first thing that comes out is character assassination. You know, same thing that happened with Trayvon Martin. You know, instead of looking at the facts of the case, we want to figure out, okay, he ended up dead, but, you know, what's up with that? I mean, this guy was, you know, it's almost as if Mr. Elias is saying, you know what, put him out with the trash. It doesn't matter whether or not somebody murdered him or not. It was good because the bottom line is he was crooked. Even though, you know, that he vehemently denied that, and he couldn't wait to have his day in court. By all the pictures and accounts, he looks like a very good family man. He was, you know, doing a profession. It's just a sad situation, but here we go with the character assassination. He had to be doing something in order for him to be killed. Your thoughts?
Well, I got to agree, man, with Jerome. When Jerome says this, the first thing that is done is the character assassination. You're right. You're 100% right. You know, what's the first thing you can do? What's the first thing they did with Trayvon Martin? They said, hey, he was a thug. What's the first thing they did with this guy? You know, they're digging deep instead of saying, hey, what actually happened to this guy? This guy, same thing with the young lady that got shot in Detroit. Oh, she was drunk and she was this. No, look, what actually happened? I want to know. If I'm in that family, I want to know what happened. I don't care about what he did. You know, I always look at the first 48. And if a drug dealer gets killed on there, they say, hey, I don't care what he did in his past. My job is to find out what happened. Mm-hmm. Well, damn, where's this at? Where's that person at that wants to find out what happened to this person? Instead of saying, well, he was this, he was that. Well, let's push him to the side. He's a piece of garbage. No. Somebody that person has a wife, he has a kid, and he has a mother, and he has a father, and he has brothers and sisters. They want to know what happened to this guy. So instead of character assassination, we need to find out what happened to this guy.
But, Jay, you don't even hear about the little boy who got rolled up in the rug, and they found him in the gym. Do y'all remember that story that was right before the holidays? You haven't heard anything else about that black boy who was rolled up in a rug and was killed, and blood was everywhere, and a shoe was somewhere else, and they say he got stuck in the rug. So they kind of wash this stuff under. You really don't hear a lot about it. They talk about it for a minute, and it's over.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right about that. I mean, it's one of those situations where, oh, well, you know, there had to be a reason. And, Jerome, this is the thing that, you know, and this is what it sounds like what they're saying. You know, well, there had to be a reason why he got murdered. You know, it just, you know, there's a reason why they shot and killed him. I mean, he did for a reason. And it's not, you know, let me make sure I want to be responsible. There's nothing that says he was shot or anything like that. I mean, I'm not sure what the cause of death is at this point, but they do think it's foul play based on the fact that they found his clothes in one location. They found him with boxers on, with one side. sock. They found loose change in the area where he was located. And once again, where he was located, according to the investigator, there's no way he could have walked down there without having any marks on his body from brush or any type of, you know, trees or whatever the case may be. There was nothing wrong with him. So it leads him to think that he was carried down there. Your thoughts, Jerome?
Well, you know, and I wouldn't even have to go that far. Here's all I need to know. He had car trouble, and he made a call, and somebody was coming to get him. Everything else after that was foul play, because we know better than this, right? We didn't need any evidence of where he was and all of that other stuff. All of that other graphic details are crime scene evidence as far as I'm concerned. But flat out, there's behavior that we just don't exhibit as black folks generally. And so I can say, if I was on a jury, I don't care anything else. You cannot condemn his behavior when he had car problems and he called somebody and he was waiting for them to pick him up. His behavior would not be more out of the ordinary than finding some place to go to the bathroom or trying to get something to eat. Like, all of that is going to be normal behavior. I didn't need, you know, you don't really need the rest. But I can tell you this, you know, there are places, Orange, Texas, you know, just driving down, what is it, 10? You
yeah.
know, there are about three places, and I remember this one, and I can't think of the name of it. I want to say it's Orange, but maybe I'm wrong. But there was one that my cousin, there's a big billboard put up by the sheriff's department that said, this person got killed here, and the crime was never solved. Ask us about it. And it was this black woman who ended up missing. The sheriff's department put that up there because nobody gets convicted in that area for killing black people, and they never have. And so my cousin, you know, out of Houston, just kept saying, I see this coming down the highway, but it's just sending a message. Why would the sheriff advertise that somebody killed somebody black and we never found who did it, right? They don't convict people for killing black folks, and we have to understand this and not get so passive in our resistance to racism and our resistance to understanding that you still have to protect your children without understanding that we just can't trust people because everything, all being equal, we should not treat them how they treated us. Like, we need to worry about that today and watch where you're going. You know, a friend of mine, his parents, probably about 10 years ago, we were planning on driving from New York to Florida or someplace, I can't remember, or Georgia, and she was worried. She goes, you guys are young professionals, you cannot drive those nice cars going down that highway. His mother was really concerned about us three black males being in a nice car driving down the interstate. And that is real fear. So we have to be still conscious about this and stop being suckered by this, you know, those commercials that say that everything is nice and lovely and everybody's getting along, because everybody is not getting along, and we need to still protect the community like we always have.
20 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our call number is 347-850-1272. You can be a part of the conversation. We're talking about what's going on in Jasper, Texas. Now, Mr. Elias, here's something that the first thing that stuck out with me when I started looking into this case. He's married to a white woman. All right? He has two biracial kids by this white woman. Do you think that played a role in this?
Could have. It most definitely could have in Texas, man. I mean, bottom line, depends on what part of Texas. You know, I like Texas, some parts of it. Some parts, you know, I'm not that crazy about. But, man, look, you know, it could have a major role in it. You know, some people, after watching some of that stuff Nancy Pelosi's daughter put out, I know damn well that the racism is alive and well down in the southern states, man. It's the way it is down that way.
And for those who may not know the information that Nancy Pelosi's daughter put out, why don't you give us a little taste of it so people will understand and be able to connect the dots?
Okay. She did a documentary on when Barack Obama was running for president. And, man, it was just like, there's no way I let that. One guy just started crying in North Carolina, saying that he couldn't believe that this country's going to hell because we're going to elect a black president. And then and another documentary, the guy was like, I'm so sick of the president giving away free stuff, and he's doing this and he's doing that. And then He said, but aren't you on welfare? He said, yeah, I am, and I'm damn proud to be on welfare. And I thought to myself, you don't want free health care, but you want free money from the government. It's just like, you know, they'll spite this, they'll shoot themselves in the foot to hurt you, man. It's just crazy to me.
Jerome, I'll ask you the same question. Do you think the fact that he had a white wife may have played a role in this in that part of the country?
I wouldn't say so. I don't know. Did he live in Jasper?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because since it's such a small community, I'm sure that they may have known who he was. And so that may, you know, that may contribute to it because of their attitudes in that area. So again, I mean, I've gotten lost in those areas, and my cousin said, do not get out the car. My cousin and I were there, and we could not find our way back to the interstate.
Wow.
From wherever we got off. And he said, look, if we go into some place, we're going to have to go in together. But we saw a police officer, and we would not speak to him because we didn't. And black people in that area, it's not a lot. And the black people who grew up or live in that area address white folks in a certain way, so they don't bring it. It's like that it's like the 1840s in that piece. So the trick is that if you grew up in a modern area, you have to get out of Jasper, get out of Orange, get out of all of those areas in that area of Texas and Arkansas and these other places. I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know if you remember the show that Oprah did years ago with one of those small towns, and they were like, we just want you out of here. It's just like that. It is just like that. So it could play a factor, even though he may have been bilingual enough to be cool enough to be, you know, to not worry about race and to be okay with it, but that doesn't mean those residents are. It's a sad story,
It is. It's really, when you really think about this and just think about, you know, we're discussing this in 2014. And, you know, and I've told the story a lot here. If you've been listening to the Serious Side, I know, you know, Vanessa's, you know, you're fairly new here. You know, I've told the story about, you know, you're right, Jerome, there are certain highways that every time I drive down this highway, bottom line is that I get pulled over. I mean, you know, and because of the type of car I drive. And, you know, and they pulled me over for silly stuff. You know, you're not supposed to be driving in the left-hand lane unless you're passing someone. What? I mean, okay, wait a minute. I'm not just going to – I don't like driving in the left-hand lane anyway. I curse people who do those types of things. But listen, come on. So that's the reason why you pulled me over? Are you serious? Or the situation that happened to me once again when I was in a parking garage at a high-end ritzy club here in Houston. Once again, someone's – checking me because, you know, I guess a black man can't own a Mercedes, and if he is or if he's going into one, then maybe he's breaking into the car. So, you know, the bottom line is that we still have this type of conversation going on in 2014. It's a sad commentary, to be perfectly honest with you, because of the fact that you like to think we've gotten past this. But no, we haven't, and, you know, it's just a part of our culture. And, you know, there's parts of Texas, you know, Sulphur Spring, Texas. That's, I don't know if I told the story on the air. I remember I was a young man. I was 20 years old. I was heading home to see my mom and stuff. You know, and it, you know, I'm not really a fan of flying. And no offense, Vanessa, but I had to get in my car and drive up north. And so it was a raggedy 1977 Oldsmobile Cutlass. And you know, I should have never tried to get on the highway with that thing anyway. But here I am driving up north, and my radiator hose bust. And so I pull into this town. And when I first pulled into the town, first of all, I'm getting ahead of myself. I pulled into this town to get gas before the radiator hose had burst. And something said, turn around. And when I turned around, there was a diner that was connected to the gas station, Mr. Elias. And it was a bunch of 60 and 70-year-old white people. There were about 80 of them in there. And when I tell you, and I'm not exaggerating, when I tell you every last one of them was looking at me, I was like, wow, it's time for me to go, you know. So I get in the car and leave, and then up the road, about a mile up the road, the car started overheating. And I was genuinely nervous because I had to drive into a small town and said, man, you know, something could happen where they can never find me again. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and this was, you know, back in the 80s, but the bottom line is that we live in a country where there are certain parts of this country, because of the color of your skin, you know, it's just not a safe place to be. It's kind of disheartening, Vanessa, when you really think about it.
Jay, I have been on the plane and had someone in the last 5 years to tell me they did not want me to serve them.
Wow.
Wow. Really?
So the other attendant said, then you won't get served.
Wow.
So it's there. It's real.
Yeah. It's real. It's real. It's a part of life, and unfortunately there are going to be people out there that will continue to be, you know, that will continue to feel that way about folks who don't look like them, which is crazy to me, Jerome, because how can you live in a society? Everything. I mean, if you are a sports fan, come on. I mean, some of the biggest names in sports are African American. I remember that scene from Do the Right Thing, Jerome, where he talked about, he was talking to the brothers at the back of the pizza spot, and they were saying, the one brother says, you're a racist. And he says, but how can you be a racist? Your favorite basketball player is Magic Johnson, and he named off a couple of black people. And he says, well, they're not really black. He's like, well, they're like clear or something. And I was like, huh? You know, because it's like, hey, if you have status, we don't see you as an African American, you know? It was weird to me.
Or if you're bilingual.
Oh, there you go.
They don't actually see it as being bilingual. That's why it unnerves me a little bit to hear black people talk about speaking correct English, because language is just language, right? So when you can understand what it is that I'm saying, whether there's a car coming or pass me a donut, like whatever, as long as you understand that is technically language, and speaking a certain way makes white folks feel comfortable. And so that's what we're just talking about, is that if a black person makes a white person feel comfortable, they just say, you're not them. You know, of course, you know, I get that a lot in politics, right? And so over the years, I have been in, I have run campaigns, and most of the time I usually do run them as a strategist, but I've run campaigns where I would come in a room and the candidate would say to their finance person and some of the other people, like 8 other people in the room, oh, he knows what's everything that's going on here anyway. They would stop talking because I was the only black person in the room. Right?
Wow.
So then I was told, you know, they're scared of you, and I said, they should be. The issue is that I'm not going to be nice to you. I'm not going to tolerate that at all, because if I have the leverage and the power to do something, I'd be doing a disservice to all black folks if I let people who I have power over do that to me. So I understand that, and I do take that very seriously when we're in positions to tolerate it or not. And when black folks are in positions, they just cannot blow it off and say, well, that's just how some people are, because systemically it's a problem. There's a case in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and I have relatives there. Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was actually in Lake Charles. And where this guy who was running for mayor, if you want to look this up online, this guy who was running for mayor was killed in his old high school parking lot, right? Mm-hmm. He was running for mayor. Now, he gets killed, the black guy. The fire department comes in. They take the body out, and they spray the car off. They spray off all the trace evidence. How do you call a fire department to clean up evidence before anybody comes there to inspect the scene?
Wow.
That is systemic. That is a systemic problem. So that's a problem. Like, we have to acknowledge that stuff goes on. So you would say, as you know, people do, oh, now it's a conspiracy of all white folks. I can care less how you take that. You can go read that story and see what happened. Right, because if I have governance over it, you can make that happen. So they actually came in. It was a pretty big news story. It didn't make really big national news, but he was a candidate running for mayor, and he was killed in his old. They don't know how he got there. It was in his car. His car was open. There was blood everywhere. The fire department came in there and sprayed the whole parking lot and the car.
Wow.
Why would you do
that? Wow. Wow.
So, you know,
I think we know.
Well, we know. But we can't put a blind eye up now and act like it does not happen. That's why, again, that's why I'm always, especially, well, on any show or any place that I am, it's why I'm always yelling when it comes to race stuff, and I don't like to talk about it because it hides in plain sight to us, and we want to act like everything's okay, and like we're the cause of somebody being racist. It's like asking, do we cause the problem of people, because we call each other thugs or whatever, that they are calling us that. That is not our problem. They're going to find something else to actually try to degrade us or oppress us at any given time. We can't make it up.
You know, Mr. Elias, you know the story that I tell. And I'm, like I said, I may have told that story here. We've been on air so long, I've told, you know, plenty of stories. But I remember the story about, and this is what Jerome was just talking about, how people got this impression of who, what, how, and when. And you talked about, you know, black people being in charge, and you have to be able to accept that responsibility and be responsible with that type of power. I remember going to meet some clients. One day it was me and two other people. They were older white people. One was a man, one was a female. You know, distinguished-looking individuals. So we go into this meeting, and the people who met us, how you guys doing? They shook our hands, blah, 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 you know. And they were nice, great people. We went into the conference room, and, you know, and they were talking to these two, you know, just assume that these people were in charge. Now, what they didn't know is that they worked for me. And so, you know, we were all in this conference room, and they were just talking to, you know, this guy named Jim and Penny, and they were just, you know, talking to him. And, yeah, we would love to be able to do things and be able to work with your company. And, oh, you know, hey, Jay, are you okay? You're comfortable? I'm like, I'm fine, you know. You know, we'll make sure I'm fine because I'm the token black dude in the room, you know. So he says, well, you know, and the thing that was so funny about it is that we all were great friends. They worked for me. They were my colleagues. We were great friends, and they knew this, and they, you know, we would play along with this. And so they were like, yeah. And says, yeah, we have to get back and talk to our boss, and we have to see whether or not we can move forward with the deal. And, you know, and we'll definitely get back with you. And the guy says, well, how long do you think it'll be before you talk to your boss? You think you can give him a call? So hold on, we can do you better than that. And they turned to me and says, Jay, what do you think? And the look on their faces when all of a sudden it's like, oh, my God, we have offended this man, because we assumed that because, you know, we have these two people here that this guy's not in charge. I says, well, I heard the proposal, and we'll get back with you guys, and we'll let you know whether we move forward with you or not. And I got up, and now they want to shake my hand first. I got them walked out. And so when we got in the car, we laughed. But it's, you know, when you really think about it, it's sad because you never know who you're talking to. And, you know, and I know we're kind of, you know, this is, you know, people saying, well, you know, what about, you know, the case with the man being killed in Jasper? I think it all plays a role, folks. I think what we're doing is painting the picture, because the bottom line is that this man got killed in Jasper, Texas. Now, here's my next question for you, Mr. Elias, and I'll direct this one to you, and I'm curious to what everyone else would think if I ask this question. Could this be a situation where, hey, he was just a random victim of violence, and that we shouldn't bring race into it?
No, I don't think it was a random victim of violence, Jay. You know, come on. In Jasper County, really? I got to agree with what Ness said.
But we're assuming this, Mr. Elias. I mean, do we know this for a fact?
Okay, I mean, look at the pattern that was happening in Jasper County. Think about that now. Hell, they drug a man behind a truck in Jasper County. So, I mean, my first thought process is, hey, look, it happened before, it's going to happen again. Racism didn't die in Jasper County because they caught these people. Hell, it's going to continue to happen, man. It's just as part of life, man, especially down in Jasper County. They drug a man that they knew. The man they drug behind the truck, they knew this guy. He was one of their so-called friends. So do I think? Yeah, I honestly think it'll come out that this was that. If evidence points to something, it smells like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, guess what? It's a duck.
It's a duck.
Well, you know, let me ask you, Jerome, is this a situation where, hey, look, people get killed every day in this country. You know, there are unfortunately random acts of violence toward everyday citizens. Is this a situation where, hey, are we making, why do we have to bring the race card in this because it happened in Jasper? I mean, are we being irresponsible with that?
And that...
just because you're hosting this show, I'm not going to laugh at that too much because I know you're asking the question being provided.
That's true. Thank you. I want you to keep that in mind, Jerome, as you answer this question. Absolutely.
Hey, I don't take shots at you, Jay. I'm just saying because I think it's funny. But I would have to ask the question, how many people in Jasper got killed and got stripped of their clothes? You work that one out for me, and then we'll have to talk about
question.
Random violence. Like, we can make a comparison. But it's like, like I enjoy the play of comparison, right? It's like we get to points where we compare stuff and say, hey, being called whatever is just like being called the N-word. Like, we always do that because we want to make other people feel like that they can relate. In this case, nobody can relate to the terror that black people feel in small communities like that. Right? That's not a random act of anything. And plus, the desecration of a body really does not happen very much unless it's serial killing going on. And so, technically, we can't even blow it off as any kind of random act of anything. We know signs when we see them. And again, go watch 12 Years a Slave for anybody who don't understand this. Right? The reason that they left black people, you know, hanging and burning for 3 days outside and white folks were walking around like everything was normal is to send a message to everybody else that that is okay in our area. That's why it was done back then.
Well, what about you, Vanessa? Same question. Do you think it's a situation where, hey, look, he was an unfortunate victim of a violent act, and, you know, race didn't really have anything to do with it?
Jay, guys, Mr. Ellis, I'm getting ready to go to church because I need to pray about this whole conversation.
You need to pray about it, absolutely.
About this whole conversation that we're having. And I think the guy said it best. There's no way that this is not racism. There's just no way. And nothing ever gets done about it in the small towns, ever. And, Jay, I used to play the same game. And guys, just so y'all, because y'all don't know me, Mr. Ellis, I have had, like, three jobs in my life. I worked at a bank for 8 years. I worked for the state of Texas for 8 years. And then I came to the airline, and I've been here for 13 years. So you know what? I played the same game when I owned the salon. I made them think that the white girl owned the salon. They walked in, went straight to her. And then they said, well, I'm going to leave you some information. And she would say, no, go take it to her. Because they didn't think that I was the owner. So I played the same game, got it off the line. I was the only black salon in a white area. And you know what? We've had windows broken and all kind of stuff was going on, so they got used to it. Racism is there. Nothing is ever going to really stop it. Obama has helped it by coming in because I see more biracial couples on the airplane than ever before, more biracial children than ever before. But you know what? People still turn their nose up at them. There are some people that I look at their expression when they come on the airplane, and people look at them and they whisper or they turn their nose up at them. It's, racism is there. It's not going to stop. That wasn't an accident, and it was a cover-up. And I need to pray about all of it. So I'm going to talk to you guys on Wednesday. And it was nice to meet you, Mr. Politician.
Well, thank you so much, Vanessa.
Thank y'all for having me. I'll talk to y'all on Wednesday.
All right, take care. God bless you.
God bless. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Vanessa is becoming slowly but surely one of our favorite listeners. Fall into the category of Easy Rider, Kavina Man, Mariana Music. I mean, everyone. We're just so blessed to have so many loyal listeners. And listen, and we know that there are people out there that we don't know your names, but you tune in every Sunday. We just say thank you because, you know, without you guys, we definitely wouldn't have a reason to do the show. 347-850-1272 is the call-in number. You listen to the Serious Side of the Jay Rouse Show. We're talking about what happened in Jasper, Texas. And, you know, the question on the table right now is it a situation where, you know, are we overreacting? I mean, this is a situation where because it was a black guy, why'd it have to be a black crime? And just to make sure I correct something that Jerome said, there was no, you know, there was really no signs. The cause of death hasn't really been put out there yet. At least I haven't found anything on it at this point. This story is still fairly new to me. This happened, I think, back in November. You know, no one has heard of this. As far as the body being left out, you know, the authorities did have the body, had a tent over the body, but, you know, the father stayed out there. And once again, it was a situation where law enforcement didn't find the body. It's just a sad state of affairs all the way around. But, look, there are places all over America, Mr. Elias, that you may run into one of these situations where, you know, people, so many crimes going unreported. We talk about this when we do our Have You Seen Me segments, which is coming up here in the next hour. You know, we talk about how, you know, there's really not a lot of focus on missing children of color or missing people of color. And, you know, and so we created a forum where we can put a spotlight on that. And we're a very, very small fish in a big pond, but it just seems to me that when it comes to stories dealing with people that look like us and sound like us, there's just not a lot of media attention.
Well, Jay, there's not just down south, man. I mean, up north here, there's racism exists too, man. Depends on where you go. Hell, I live in Maryville. Hell, I could go right up the road in Crown Point, which is the next town over from me. Racism is very prevalent there. You know,
uh-huh.
I remember back in the 80s when I knew a girl who lived out in Maryville. Well, they used to, you know, she had to fight her way through just to come through school. In Crown Point, I remember the first black couple that lived out there, they used to burn their house down. They just had to have their house rebuilt every year because when they went on vacation, somebody would burn their house down. So, I mean, it's prevalent. And for us to sit here and say in Jasper, Texas, that you don't know if it's racism, man, come on. It's racism, and it's alive and well, you know. And I always hear people say, well, if we don't talk about it, it'll go away. Bull. It's always going to be prevalent because you got people in life that's going to just hate us because of our skin color or hate a person of a different skin color because of their skin color.
Well, I tell you what, if we won't talk about it, it'll go away. That's a new dose of medicine for me. I've never heard of that. That's ridiculous.
I've heard it time and time again.
Wow, that's crazy. So now that we know, you know, so the facts of the case are, once again, this young man's truck broke down. He called his wife, and it was a situation where his car had broke down before his truck had broke down, before he had issues with his alternator. And a store clerk said, look, she saw him, but he put his phone in his cell phone in his sock, and he took off running. And so she didn't say if people were chasing him. She didn't see anybody chase him. He just took off running. So people may think, now, is it a situation where the meds could have kicked in and done something? But, you know, once again, there's just so many loose ends to this case, Jerome, that, you know, it's going to be a while until we find the answer. Now that the Texas Rangers have taken over this investigation, who knows? Maybe we'll get better information, and maybe we'll, you know, someone will take this thing more seriously than what's going on with the local authorities in that area. Your thoughts?
Does that sound strange to you?
It sounds
seriously,
very strange
to
me.
Seriously, that he just took off running? No, no.
Yeah.
Here's why it's strange. I think that she needs to be investigated. Did she make a phone call? That's why he took off running. Like, there's a case it's right off of 10. It's next to Orange, but it's I can't think of the name of the place. But
okay.
Where a black person went to a restaurant and they said, don't make us call the sheriff. They had to kick him out because even on that part of Interstate 10, the policeman says, don't go over there. Like, they tell them to stay out of that town. So did he go in there and she called some people and he took off running? Because all she said was he took off running. But why would he do that if he was in a safe environment? I think she was in a hostile, and he was in a hostile environment, and that was her cover.
I don't know.
No, I'm just saying that does not sound reasonable.
This is illogical.
Right?
Yeah. Why would? Yeah. Yeah.
No. Right. Because again, if somebody was chasing you, you would lock yourself in someplace opposed to running out in the open. Because if there's nothing there, where are you going?
Really?
So I would kind of look back at her. But it's funny how we accept, like, you can tell when we look back on this from, you know, a month from now, you'll find out that she was lying. We're going to find out that, you know what I mean? Because it just doesn't make sense up front.
That's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, well, why would he, you know, why wouldn't he shelter in place if you're in a public area?
He's waiting for somebody.
Yeah, you're waiting on somebody on the side of the road waiting for somebody. It's sad. It's truly a sad, sad situation. It just makes you think about your safety in this country. And you know, and the bottom line is that, you know, this guy lived in this community, and, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, I lived in southern Illinois, and, you know, we grew up in areas where there were a lot of white people and stuff like that. And in the 60s, we just never feared for our, you know, we knew people that we just didn't fear for our lives like that. And, you know, it's I don't know. It just seems to me America's getting worse. I remember saying this when President Obama first won election. The thing I said, you know, the election of this African-American president is going to do one of two things. It's either going to show how far our country's come, or it's going to really show the racial underbelly and the nastiness that's going on. And so it's just, you know, it's frightening, you know. It's very frightening. So let me get your final thoughts on this. Let me go to you, Jerome, first. Your final thoughts on this particular topic.
Well, I don't really know what to think about it, but it's just kind of one of those cases that we are going to have to, unfortunately, let play out, because none of it makes any sense. And I guess not as a warning, because this is not the, you know, the 1800s or whatever, the 1930s. I don't want to say that as a warning, but we really need to be aware of our environments, and we have to, you know, make sure that we get up, go out, and protect those in rural communities. Again, I have family in that area, so I actually know that feeling of saying that you want to protect your family, opposed to saying, hey, we should go in there and picket, boycott, or whatever. You still can't do that, because when you leave, those families are still there. So, you know, it's just to make us aware that this shouldn't be foreign to us to hear stories like this, because it is going on, and it's going on right in our face.
Okay. What about you, Mr. Elias?
Well, all I can say is racism is alive and it's prevalent, man, and it's not going anywhere in our lifetime. So, you know, if we look at this case and we come back and we revisit it months later, we're going to find out, like we were talking about earlier, that, hey, you know, Jerome made a great point when he said, you know, this guy just takes off and runs for no reason at all. You know, he just took his cell phone and put it in his sock and he takes off running. Then they find him fully unclothed, you know, in a place where if he would walk through it, he would have been cut up. Which, you know, man, like I said, something stinks to high hell of this one. We'll find out what happened in the coming months, because, like I said, everything that's done, the drive will come to the light, man. So I do believe that lady had something to do with it.
Wow. Yeah, well, you're right about that. I think that, once again, everything that goes down, you know, like we talked about, no lie lives forever. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. All right, folks, listen, we'll stay on top of the story, because we definitely want to know what's going on with it. We'll let you know what the updates are. All right, coming up next, before we go, a quick look at some stories that made headlines. We have a doozy for you today. Plus, we'll give you our Super Bowl picks, and you're only minutes away from On a Need-to-Know Basis with Jerome Esprit. Don't go nowhere, folks, but we'll wind it down. We'll be right back.
The week that was in the news.
A long life, longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now.
On the evening before his death, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered one of the most stirring and prophetic speeches of his life.
And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you.
Less than 24 hours after he spoke those words, Martin Luther King was assassinated. His accused killer, James Earl Ray, pled guilty to the murder, and the case was officially closed.
Next week, President Obama will be delivering his annual State of the Union address, where he's expected to outline his agenda for the coming year. You know, I was going to make a joke about this story, but I don't think it needs a joke. I think it needs to be slow jam. You know what I'm talking about, Quest?
Yeah, Jimmy, I think you're saying you want to slow jam this news.
That's right. I want to slow jam the news, and I'm not the only one.
Hello, I'm Governor Mitt Romney, former governor of Massachusetts and Republican candidate for president. Yeah! And I, too, would like to slow jam this news.
Hit me three times!
In just 4 days, President Obama will speak to the American people about some of the most important issues facing our nation today, from unemployment and debt to immigration reform and education, as well as one of our most pressing concerns, the recent revelations that U.S. citizens have been exposed to widespread NSA wiretapping.
Oh, yeah. President Obama looked the American people up and down and said, I'd tap that. But then NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden whipped out his whistle and started blowing it.
Whistle blowing ain't what it used to be. Just ask the cast of Duck Dynasty.
All right, folks, it's time for, before we go, a quick look at some stories that made headlines this past week. First of all, I wanted to, you know, this past week we celebrated the King's birthday, the King holiday. We really didn't, you know, usually try to talk about him, and I just want to take a few minutes here just to acknowledge that. Mr. Elias, what are your thoughts, man, on Dr. King?
Well, hey, man, you know, Dr. King, hey, man, he sacrificed his life for us. He put everything out there. He sacrificed his life. He did everything that he was, you know, as a great leader should do, man. And he knew that his time was short. You could tell by his speeches. But hey, man, you know, I appreciate what this man did for us, man. I do.
Yeah, I mean, that last speech, man, it makes the Jerome, it just makes your hair stand up on your back, man, when you listen to that last speech he gave, because it's almost as if he knew that that was his last speech, and man, he knocked it out the park.
Yeah, you know, just being, I was going to mention this in the news coming up, that we don't appreciate the symbolism of someone like Dr. Martin Luther King until after he's passed, and we have to be careful of people going around trying to sully his name because we are looking at him that way. He did he was a great sacrifice for all of us just for him to be on the planet, so we should acknowledge him as a leader.
Absolutely. And speaking of which, the complete opposite. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. Hey, Mitt Romney, he was slow jamming the news. That guy is stiff as all get out. But, you know, listen, at least it showed he had a sense of humor, Mr. Elias.
Okay. Yeah. I was thoroughly laughing at Mitt Romney. I was thoroughly impressed with Mitt Romney. Yes. Yes.
Oh, you guys are horrible, man. You know, what say you, Jerome?
Well, okay, because I was going to say, you better not skip me on this one. Why are we even talking to Mitt Romney? No, right. Seriously.
Because he has a black grandbaby, what? That's why.
And why did he buy that black grandbaby? Now, so here's the
issue.
Oh, my God. I can care less. Now, here's the thing. We keep people in the news just to normalize the crazy. You know, they're normalizing crazy. So now I don't like Jimmy Fallon. Didn't really like him anyway, but I don't like that. That we have to pacify the crazy in this world because it normalized them. That's why we think racist people are okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely correct. Okay, I guess we won't do it again. I promise. I'm sorry, sir. We won't do that again.
You can do whatever you want. I'm just going to cut it up every time it comes on.
All right, folks, there it is. The last time this year you will hear the music. It is time for our football picks, and it's time for the Super Bowl pick, the biggest game of the year. And Mr. Elias, I don't know who, I forgot to tally up who won last week. Did you get both of them right last week?
I think
all of us did, man.
Uh-huh.
And I think Jerome was wrong.
Yeah, actually, I was wrong. I was wrong on Seattle.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I'm
going to
be right on
wrong.
Seattle this time.
Oh, there it is. And it's time for our Super Bowl picks. And Jerome, you going with who?
I'm going with Denver. I'm just going to be right on Seattle losing.
You didn't see that coming. That time. I didn't see that one coming. I fell for the banana in the tailpipe. Wow, okay. What about you, Mr. Elias?
Yeah, I want to make my picks next week, man. Well, I want to see what the weather's like, man. Hell, if it's snowing and raining in Denver, New York, I'm going to pick Seattle. If it's not, I'm going with Denver.
What kind of pick is that? That is, you know what? We're not even going to. What kind of damn pick is that, Mr. Elias?
How's that ridiculous? Denver's a passing team. If it's raining and snowing and
just give us a pick.
I just gave you my pick. There's my pick right there.
That's a great pick.
All right.
You know, I tell you what, I think I'm going to go against the grain. I think that the Broncos will win, but I'm going to go with Seattle. All right, we'll see how we did next week. All right, folks, it's time for Chatterbox. Some responses, thoughts from the chat room and from social media. We have time to get in two, Mr. Elias, because we're running behind. Give me two of them, sir.
Okay, I got Nika. Nika, when she said, Sherman may not really be a thug, but his actions made people thinking and verbalizing. And then
okay.
Mariana Music says, racial discord in our country is unfortunate, but it's a reality.
Give me one more. Yeah, one from Easy Rider.
Easy Rider, yep, I sure do. Easy Rider says, I always thought the word thug wasn't for black or white. Why, it was a ruffian, bullying, tough guy. I never put a color to it.
All right, that's Chatterbox of the day. All right, folks, quick break, and then we'll be back with On a Need to Know Basis with Jerome Esprit. Don't go anywhere.
Sir? Have you seen this girl?
Hello, friends. I'm Jay, the host of The Jay Rowell Show and the serious side of The Jay Rowell Show. And it's time for another edition of Have You Seen Me? Where we put the spotlight on missing children of color. We're heading to Arizona. Tonight, police is looking for young Jada Amelia. She's been missing since January 8th from Levine, Arizona. Her birth date is August 3rd, 2000. She is 13 years old. She's a female. She's biracial. She has black hair, brown eyes. She's 5'2". She weighs 150 pounds. Jada may be in the company of an adult male. She's biracial, like I mentioned earlier. She's black Hispanic of El Salvadorian descent. She has a black mark on her right arm and her ears are pierced. Anyone with information on young Jada's whereabouts are encouraged to contact the Phoenix Police Department at area code 602-262-6151. Once again, the number is area code 602-262-6151. We pray for the safe return of this beautiful young lady, and we ask that you keep her family in your prayers. If you'd like to see someone featured on Have You Seen Me, all you have to do is pick up the phone and call. Dial 347-850-1272 if you're listening to this during a live broadcast. Or you can contact us via Facebook at the TJR's Radio Network page. You can leave the information there or you can send us an email at thejryleshowatlive.com. That's thejryleshowatlive.com. Or you can send me a message personally on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and type in J. Ryle. We pray for all people missing regardless of color. And until next time, you've been listening to Have You Seen Me, where we focus our attention on missing people of color. Take care.
Somewhere in America, a mother is crying.
A family is torn.
A child is lost,
missing, or even abducted.
We need your help.
Contact
your local police station for a listing of missing children in your area, or log on to www.missingkids.com to obtain further information regarding missing children in your local community.
Was the next face you see?
Maybe a child that will need your help.
Help support America's missing!
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
All right, folks, it's time for On a Need to Know Basis with our main man, Jerome Espree. Jerome, what do you got, brother? What do you have this morning?
All right, so first of all, this, you know, I want to still acknowledge MLK's birthday. Now, the birthday of Martin Luther King was January 15th, but we celebrated it this past Monday, which I'd like to celebrate as civil rights for everyone. So I called it M-Tray Day, and that's Martin, Malcolm, and Mandela. So I acknowledge all three of them on this particular holiday week for Martin Luther King's birthday. So if you want to know what I did, I guess. I kind of try to acknowledge everybody. Not everybody, but MLK was is to be kind of revered, and we need to respect him. So I wanted to make sure I said that again. Now, I missed this last week, but I wanted to say, you know, Gilligan's Island professor passed away of heart kidney failure at 89.
Yeah.
Russell Johnson passed away last week. I missed it on last week's show. Do you know what his name was on Gilligan's Island? The professor. What was his name?
You know what? I saw that somewhere. I can't remember, but someone had talked about that earlier that day. I can't remember. What was his name?
It's Roy Hinkley.
That's it.
I never knew he had a name on the show.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, it was a trivia.
It was Professor Roy Hinkley. Anyway, all right. So a D.C. court revived the challenge to President Obama's executive order banning lobbyists from serving on government committees and advisory councils. Now, this is important because people keep asking, what has the president done? He banned lobbyists in 2009, and they're still fighting to get back inside of influence inside of the executive branch. But the court just revived that challenge. He kicked out all the lobbyists. Right, Mitt Romney would have brought him back. Anyway, so president also plans to visit Pope Francis next month, or in March, his trip to Europe. So he's going to the Netherlands, Belgium, and other parts of Italy. Now, Arizona State University, I mentioned them earlier, but they severed ties with Chi Kappa Epsilon after 65 years. Now, the fraternity hosted a racist Martin Luther King Day party and asked guests to dress like black people. So I don't know if you saw the pictures out there. They were crazy.
Yeah.
I'm glad Arizona State got up off their butt and kicked them up out of there, no matter how. 65 years on campus. And speaking of Arizona State, I don't know if you guys know, Ice Cube actually went to Arizona State. Did you know that?
Did he? Oh, I didn't know that. I thought he was that guy, that bum that was in that movie that lived at the, I don't know, what was the name of that movie? I can't remember the name of that.
Oh, here you go. All right, forget you. All right, so South L.A. Youth Center, the hometown of O'Shea Jackson or Ice Cube, they actually raised money to put his name on a Goodyear blimp. So 20 years after the song "Today Was Good Day," remember the lyrics? He walked outside and saw a Goodyear blimp, and it said, "I choose a pimp." Remember that? They actually paid to run the lyrics of his song across the Goodyear blimp.
Wow.
$25,000.
Wow.
They raised the money. Hey, now
crazy.
The value of NBA franchises, the most expensive franchise, obviously don't have to do with a winning record, but the New York Knicks is valued at $1.4 billion.
Really?
Wow. Yes. Brooklyn is next for some unknown reason, but the third one is, yeah, they
They count the building as well.
Wow.
So how much money they made. So the Chicago Bulls is third with $1 billion, but they actually raised, it's just because they're crowd-leading attendance, and they said they have low player cost. So they don't play their players jack, and they have full attendance, and now they actually turn the biggest cash flow of the NBA.
Huh.
Isn't that sad?
Oh, where are the Miami Heat?
I don't know where they are in the list. This is a Forbes estimate, so I have to go back and look. Miami, you would think they were up there. Their payroll is high. But
yeah,
we're talking about the value of a franchise and merchandise. And so Miami Heat probably is in the top five. They definitely in the top five.
Okay.
But the funny thing, we're only talking about the ones that spend the billions. Those were the three billion-dollar teams. The Celtics was $875 million.
So you have New York, you have Brooklyn, and who else?
New York and Chicago. Michael Jordan money.
Yeah. Send them a check every month. Yeah.
They should still send them a check. Now, the NFL teams, they average team worth on the NFL is $1.17 billion. They have 23 teams that have over $1 billion value.
Wow.
So it's rare in the NBA, but the NFL, they have that kind of money.
America's game.
Now, there you go. Speaking of billionaires, you know the billionaire who offered $75 million to the person who can turn his lesbian daughter straight? He had 20,000 people try to get at her. They lost, and he doubled it. It's now $150 million, and his daughter said,
"That's wrong.
Hey, look, you're going to have to go through me. Once I get checked out of this list, I'm going to hit you up, Elias." Now, his daughter, the funny thing is his daughter said she's been married to her partner for 2 years, and she said in response, she'll comply with the terms as long as the man in question doesn't mind that she has a wife. And he donates some of his $150 million to charity.
Okay, where's she at? Where's she at?
Yeah, that wasn't a deal breaker, was it? I didn't think so.
I was wondering
if that was going to be a deal breaker for you. All right. And I have a woman was left with 272 needles in her scalp after a porcupine fell on her head in Rio de Janeiro. So she was walking her dog. Yeah, she was walking her dog, and it fell. She walked under a lamppost, and it fell from a lamppost.
Mm-hmm.
And so for all you animal activists, the animal is said to survive the fall, by the way. That is just funny to me. I don't know why they put that in the story, but I'm like, who cares?
Yeah, because, hey, PETA, that's why.
Wow. PETA care about fur. They don't care about porcupine needles in somebody's head. That was said, 272 needles.
Wow. It's crazy.
So if you're ever in New York City, you know, there's a new studio that opened up. Now, I'm not advising this, but it's offering a co-ed naked yoga class. It's called Bold and Naked Studios in Chelsea. It's $25, and they're saying, okay, I just want to get this straight, while many equate being naked with sex, this could be farther from the truth in a naked yoga class. It's about being comfortable in your own skin and the amazing confidence that comes with it. And they're sticking to that story, too, by the way. That it only costs $25.
Dang.
And it's cool.
Where is this at?
That's going to be in Chelsea Piers in New York City.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. So I just wanted to put that out there. Oh, in my bag, you know, I usually kind of throw a teacher story in there, but since this one is from Houston, a Houston English teacher was sentenced to 1 year in jail and 1 year probation for sleeping with a 15-year-old student. Now, I think this is Catherine Camille Murray, who's 31 and married. She pled guilty to improper relations with a student and was also charged with harboring a runaway. Now, here's the sad thing. She had sex with this kid in classroom, got caught in his house, got caught someplace else, and tried to run away with her because she closed out her bank account and planned to skip the border to Mexico. He got 1 year in jail. Is she black or white?
Really?
I'm done. That's it. I just wanted to say that.
She's white.
She's white.
You
she is definitely white.
Yeah, we know. Texas let her off, right?
All right. You know, and those stories chap my behind every time I hear those stories because, you know, it's all about, you know, who it seems to me is who you know and where you are. Man, I tell you what, great job as always, Jerome Esprit, and that's it for this week. Don't forget that every Sunday, folks, you can get that type of knowledge right here. We'll be back after news break with our final thoughts. Don't go anywhere. It's the Serious Side.
This is NPR News. I'm Giles Snyder. In Thailand, at least one person has been killed, dozens more injured in election-related violence after anti-government protesters blocked polling stations in the capital, Bangkok, where early voting was to take place ahead of next week's general election. Michael Sullivan has more from Thailand.
The protesters want no part of an election. They want caretaker Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat out immediately to be replaced by an unelected so-called People's Council. They accused the democratically elected leader and her family of corruption. Protesters today blocked access to dozens of polling stations, in some cases chaining the doors closed to prevent people from exercising their right to vote. One protest leader was shot in the head near a polling station, where demonstrators clashed with supporters of the embattled prime minister. Despite a state of emergency declared by the government Tuesday, police made no effort to stop the demonstrators. Advance polling went smoothly in much of the rest of the country, proof, government supporters say, that the protesters have little support outside the capital. For NPR News, I'm Michael Sullivan in Chiang Rai.
More violent protests in Ukraine. That's the sound of activists removing pieces of broken glass and other rubble from inside a government building in Kiev. It was stormed by protesters who clashed with police overnight. Another big demonstration is planned today. Opposition leaders say protests will continue, despite an offer by President Viktor Yanukovych to hand them top government posts. In Egypt, the death toll from this weekend's clashes between security forces and protesters is climbing. The health ministry now says at least 49 people died and nearly 250 were wounded in Cairo and elsewhere on the third anniversary of the uprising that toppled Hosni Mubarak. The Egyptian news agency is reporting that more than 1,000 people were arrested. Two Afghan soldiers and two civilians are dead following a suicide attack on an Afghan army transport bus in Kabul. NPR's Sean Carberry describes what happened.
A man wearing a suicide vest blew himself up next to a bus full of Afghan army soldiers, wounding more than 20 people in addition to the four killed. Most of the wounded were soldiers. In the past, violence has slowed during the winter as the Taliban take refuge in Pakistan, but government spokesman Sadiq Siddiqui says that's not happening this year.
They are told to stay in Afghanistan and to continue their fight because of the upcoming election.
Hilaluddin Halal, a former deputy minister of interior, says the Taliban and their backers are trying to exploit the political uncertainty over the April presidential election and President Karzai's refusal to sign a security agreement with the U.S. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Kabul.
Stanislas Wawrinka has won his first Grand Slam tennis title. He beat Rafael Nadal in four sets at the Australian Open today to claim the men's singles championship. This is NPR News.
Folks, another Sunday down, and once again, we appreciate each and every last one of you. Before we say our goodbyes, let's say our hellos to a few people from Mr. LS before we get into our final thoughts. Real quick, man, let's say hello to a few people in the chat room. Who do we have, brothers?
Okay. Of course, Easy Rider's in there. Esprit, Jerome Esprit. We got Lavinia Shonuff, Social Action.
Right.
Valcine's in there. We also had Marianne Music in there, and that's it. Social Action.
All right. All right, I want to say good morning to Vera. Hello, how you doing? You just tuned in, sweetheart. No worries. We're here every Sunday morning. So check us out next Sunday. I also want to say what's up to Mavis. Hello out of Baytown. And Ruth J. out of New York City, New York. Welcome in. All right, it's time for our final thoughts. Jerome, my man, you're up first. Final thoughts.
All right, so I missed this news story, but I just wanted to, for the World War II buff, that the descendants, if you know, Archduke Ferdinand was killed, and that's the saying that started World War One. But his family came out this week on the anniversary. And if you know, World War One
killed about 37 million people. It was about 100 years ago. And his descendant of his said the war would have happened anyway if his descendant wasn't killed. And they're just trying to set the record straight, I guess. But it's just the anniversary of the First World War. So just wanted to make sure I mentioned that in there. And just want to say everybody have a good week, and I'll see you again next week.
All right, man. Appreciate you, as always. Mr. LES, man, final thoughts.
Well, I'd like to chime in on something Jerome said earlier, man. We need to stop taking what we did wrong and what we're doing right. Look, the bottom line is this young man in Texas, was something bad happened to him. Why are they looking for character assassinations on this young man instead of looking for the truth? Look, we need to start finding the truth about what happened to our people instead of character assassinations. Because if you look in any of our clauses, we can assassinate any of us. So look, stop that, look for the truth, and find out what happened to this young man.
You know, words really can't explain how I feel about this story. You know, as I sit back and think about what am I going to say for my final thoughts, I just say, wow. And that's the only thing that comes to my mind right about now is wow. I mean, how can you live in a country where people don't like you because of the way you look? Period. Doesn't matter about your intel or, I mean, your intellect or the things that you do for the community. It doesn't matter. It's all about because you are darker than me, then you're someone who I don't like. Now, if I give you a reason not to like me, by all means, listen, hey, I clap my hands to you. I salute you. Don't like me if I'm an asshole. Don't like me if I'm a jerk. But if you don't like me because of the way I look, what does that say about you? What does that say about the way you were raised? I mean, think about it, folks. How can you live in this country of ours where everything that's around entertainment, it involves people of color? You know, listen, I mean, if you like sports, hey, one of the biggest sports stars out there right now is who? He'll be playing the Super Bowl next weekend, Russell Wilson. He's black. If you are a big, big music fan, some of the biggest news stars out there is who? Is Jay-Z and, I should say, are who? Jay-Z and Beyonce. Folks, let's get it together. Because, you know, Baskin-Robbins has 31 flavors. And listen, we're in a melting pot, and the way it works, this is just the country we live in. If you don't like it, move somewhere else. Go live in the woods somewhere. That's all I have to say about it. It's a sad thing. So on that note, Mr. LES, if it's Sunday morning and we're talking serious stuff, what time is it, my friend?
It's time for the serious side of the J. Rao Show.
Folks, it's been a pleasure to serve you this Monday morning. So listen, for my man Jerome Esprit, Mr. LES, Dr. Princess Aldea, and Vanessa for stopping by. I'm Jay, and once again, if it is Sunday, we're talking serious stuff. It is the serious side of the Jay Rao Show. God bless everybody. Enjoy your work week. We'll see you in 7 days.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.